From high atop Rocky Road in Moab, Utah, it's KZMU News. I'm Molly Marcello.
On the program today, we have the weekly newsreel, where we check in with reporters on their latest stories from the Moab area. Today, we discuss a high-profile issue affecting Cane Creek Boulevard. After a long discussion, the Grand County Commission postponed a decision related to a luxury residential and overnight rental development. We also talk about why it's difficult to forecast weather in Moab and how local topography affects our weather systems. And we finish off with news of a groundbreaking at the Arroyo Crossing housing development. Sophia Fisher, reporter with the Times Independent, starts off with the county's debate over approving a conditional use permit for the Cane Creek development.
Last week at their April 16th meeting, the Grand County Commission was engaged in a discussion about whether or not to provide a conditional use permit to the forthcoming development on Cane Creek Boulevard. And that permit specifically would allow for its wastewater treatment plant and culinary water system to go into place.
Okay. So conditional use permit, there's been so much discussion about what leeway a county government has on approving or denying a conditional use permit.
Absolutely. And in the state of Utah, there are very strict standards for not approving a conditional use permit. So the kind of the burden of proof is on the, you know, the land use authority to come up with reasons why they shouldn't provide these permits. So it's definitely kind of weighted, I would say, in favor of the applicants for these permits. And basically, the land use authority needs to find that there are kind of significant negative impacts that cannot be mitigated if they were to approve this conditional use permit.
All right. And what happened?
They tabled a decision.
All right. So they postponed the decision. And in your article, you had some comments from an attorney working on behalf of the developers. What did that attorney say?
Yeah, so Bruce Baird, he was the representative of the Cane Creek developers, and he had kind of a spirited back and forth with many commissioners during roughly an hour and a half of discussion. So it was a long agenda item. And I would say, you know, there was pretty substantive discussion of several different topics, but I think one point that jumped out early on in the discussion was the threat of litigation, actually, should the commission decide not to approve this conditional use permit, and, you know, should the applicants find that that was unfair to them. At one point, County Attorney Stephen Stocks was discussing the potential for litigation, you know, should the applicants decide they want to pursue that path if the CUP were denied. He mentioned a case with Tooele City that required the city to shell out $22.5 million to developers for allegedly, you know, impeding their development. And as it turns out, actually, Mr. Baird, the attorney, was a lead attorney on that case. And he mentioned early on in the meeting that if the county were to egregiously violate the private property rights of these specific applicants, then he said the potential damages could be a number that makes that $22.5 million, quote, look small.
Wow.
So that was a kind of tense moment, I would say.
Yeah. So this attorney that's working for the developers is not shy about suing local governments. Now, what about comments from other commissioners and their reasoning for tabling or taking some more time to decide on this conditional use permit?
Yeah, overall, several commissioners, including Hadeen and also Commissioner Mary McGann, said they just didn't feel they had the appropriate amount of time to review the public comment they received. Several public comments also included a lot of technical details, apparently, about these proposed wastewater and culinary water systems. They'd only had those comments in some cases a few hours or for a few days, and just felt like it was a high profile and like kind of a tense enough topic that they really wanted to take more time.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, two commissioners did vote against the tabling. Those were commissioners Mike McCurdy and Bill Winfield. And reached later, Winfield said that he voted against tabling because he's worried about the threat of litigation. He's worried about the cost that could place on residents. And he said he doesn't want the commission to wade into litigation territory.
Yeah, this is such a sticky issue. And it sounds like with the amount of public attention on this particular development, almost seems like the commission might be sued either way.
Yeah, that's an almost direct quote from Commissioner Evan Clapper during that discussion. He did say in the meeting, he said, I think at this point we're going to be sued one way or another, no matter kind of how we decide this. And he said maybe, you know, it could be from citizen advocacy groups, too, that have sprung up in opposition to this development.
Right. Okay. And when do you think the commission will make their final decision, Sophia?
It probably has to be May 7th. According to actually state statute, the commission would have been required to make a decision by May 6th. But Baird said that due to the goodwill of his applicants, they were willing to extend that by an extra day, which would be the commission's next meeting anyways on May 7th.
Okay. Anything else to mention about this piece.
Baird is he's a colorful attorney with a very, you know, strong past of representing developers who might be vying against municipalities or counties. And he also has some kind of high profile relatives.
Who is he related to?
He is the uncle of singer Billie Eilish. Funnily enough,
that is such a strange piece of information to add color to this person. Oscar winner Billie Eilish.
Him and Billie Eilish's mother, who's his sister, they grew up in Fruta, Colorado, actually. So not too far from Moab.
Okay. Wow. 7 degrees of separation there. Wow. We should cue a Billie Eilish song. And moving to the inside of the paper, Sophia, you wrote a pair of articles about climate and weather. You have this great photo of a local woman showing off her weather forecast set up in her Spanish Valley backyard. What's going on with forecasting weather in Moab?
I specifically looked at different ways that citizens can get involved in improving and bolstering weather forecasting in Moab. I spoke with a meteorologist out in Grand Junction, Colorado, which is our local forecasting office with the National Weather Service. And he said the radar they use for Moab is actually located right outside of Grand Junction. And as a result of the curvature of the earth and the elevation of the radar, they actually miss the lower portions of storms in Moab, which means the radar doesn't do the best sometimes at picking up all the precipitation that could fall and predicting how much precipitation we're likely to get. So actually, citizens can join a local community collaborative called Coco Ross, where they report precipitation and snowfall and rain to the National Weather Service, which helps them just increase confidence in their radar.
Okay, this is called Coco Ross, and it's spelled in a very unique way. It's spelled Coco, like coconut, R-A-H-S, and it's short for the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network.
Yes, well done.
You know, before we talk a little bit more about Coco Ross and what it is, you know, tell me why you got interested in this subject, Sophia.
Well, I am a weather nerd, so it's rare that I'm not looking for ways to incorporate weather into my reporting. But I know it's also something that you hear from people, too, about how it seems like Moab's just in a rural, isolated area. Our forecasting office is fairly far away. And Karen Fury, the Spanish Valley resident who I have a picture of in the paper, she mentioned that when she would watch weather forecasts on the TV, the forecaster would always stand right in front of Moab, and it really annoyed her. So just, I think in general, there's an understanding among many residents that we kind of feel overlooked in some ways, or it's just hard to do weather reporting. You know, one of our official weather stations is out in the airport, which is 15 miles north of town. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense that, like, Moab itself sometimes doesn't align with the weather immediately surrounding it, too.
Right. Weather is important for a lot of reasons to know mm-hmm. what the weather is going to be for farmers, for people who are trying to plan outdoor recreation, even Absolutely. For emergency events, right?
Absolutely. Fury was a dispatcher for the Interagency Fire Center and said that that's what inspired her to join Coco Ross. Tom Harridan, a participant in Castle Valley, said that, yeah, he's interested in improving just climate data and climate reporting, which is really, really interesting. And I also think there's been an additional attention locally on weather and specifically monsoonal storms since the big flood we had in August of 2022. So I think people are just really focusing on precipitation events and trying to gird against them and improve people's ability to predict large floods, too, that could be coming down into Moab.
Fury has a gauge and a rain gauge and a weather station in her backyard. Is that the case for the other four members of local Coco Ross?
So all you actually need is a rain gauge. You can buy those online. They are $40 to $50, so there is a cost associated mm-hmm. with it. You don't need a weather station. That's optional.
That's for the extreme weather nerds. Yep. So here's the big question, Sophia. You know, where would you go now that you've done all this research and digging around why it's hard to forecast weather in Moab? Where do you go to find out what the weather is going to be?
Oh, I love NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That's my preferred weather site, but I think they all have their benefits and drawbacks, and I think mm-hmm. all of them underestimate our summer temperatures
okay.
when it gets really hot here.
I'm curious if you will be calling Fury up now, asking her for the weather station in Spanish Valley.
Honestly, not a bad idea. And you can get all these Coco Ross observations. You can get all of them. They're all publicly accessible online, too. So if anyone wants to see these kind of, you know, daily records of precipitation, you can check them out online.
Now, you also have another article sort of paired with this one about Moab's climate oddities, as you say in the headline. What's up with this? Why is it so odd?
Yeah, Moab, the city of Moab, I should say, is hotter and drier than immediately surrounding areas. And there is a pretty straightforward meteorological reason for this.
Okay, tell me.
It's because we are the lowest elevation point in our surrounding region. And in the weather world, when you are, this is a quote from Jeff Colton, who's a meteorologist in Grand Junction. We are at the bottom of a big bowl. And in the weather world, the bottom of the bowl is the driest part. Because physics.
Because physics. Wow. Okay, so that's why we're hotter and drier.
Mm-hmm. So when storms come in to Moab, almost no matter where they're coming from, they have to decrease in elevation, which produces what are called downsloping winds. Mm-hmm. And when winds downslope, they become hotter and drier because of changes in air pressure, so physics. Mm-hmm. So a lot of storms that blow through dry out actually as they enter the valley, which I think is really interesting.
Was this another article where you're like, why is it so hot and dry in Moab City? Yes. Let me find out.
Yes. I was on the phone with him and I was like, is there like a reason behind this? And he was like, oh yeah. I was,
wow. Mind blown. Mind blown. Well, thank you so much. You can read more about Moab's strange climate oddities and the topography behind it in this week's edition of the Times Independent. And finally, let's mention a groundbreaking that was a piece of positive housing news. Tell us about what's going on at Arroyo Crossing.
Yeah. Last Thursday, April 18th, Arroyo Crossing broke ground on 83 new units.
So this is going to be an apartment complex?
There are several things actually they're breaking ground on. One is an apartment complex and one is the Confluence Cottages, which is a collection of one and two bedroom small homes. There was also groundbreaking on pre-development work for Tract E, a very exciting name, which will include townhomes.
So actually three different types of development going breaking ground all at once. How was the groundbreaking? You were out there, you took photos.
It was lovely. It was warm and sunny. There were representatives there from several local affordable housing organizations, from local governments. There were state officials there, too, and actually some folks from national funds, too, that have helped support Arroyo Crossing. So a nice smattering of officials.
And as you report, it sounds like there'll be a mixture of units for folks in households making 80 to 115% of the area median income.
Yeah, so I should say the 80 to 115% is for the cottages, and then the apartment complex will actually be for low-income individuals. And really excitingly, there will be some set-asides for specifically vulnerable populations like victims of domestic violence. Mm. To get in touch, you can reach out to the Housing Authority of Southeastern Utah. They are developing some of these projects and are in touch with other folks developing other ones. So I think the Housing Authority would probably be your best bet for contact.
Sophia Fisher, reporter with the Times Independent. Find more stories at moabtimes.com. You can also find the pieces that were mentioned today in the show notes on our website, kzmu.org, or wherever you listen to the KZMU News podcast. As always, thanks for tuning in and supporting KZMU, community-powered radio.